This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Oh, hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Contrary to my opening, we have a fascinating chat coming to us today, because we are going somewhere deep that every one of us goes, but we rarely think about.
I think you gave us a hint with your intro, Jeff. I'm very curious. What problem are we solving today?
Why do we need sleep?
Why do we need sleep? Oh, I think we all need to know the answer to this, especially those of us that are like so busy that it would probably be easier if we didn't. But who is our guest today, Jeff?
It is a good thing we have our guest today because we all want yes. these answers. Today's yes. guest is the fantastic Dr. Nancy Cowden-Hennessy, who is a neuroscientist and a science teacher at a high school where she teaches a fascinating sleep science topic, and all of her students lovingly refer to her as Dr. C.
Welcome to the show, Dr. C.
Oh, well, thank you, Jennifer and Jeff. Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Well, we are excited to have you. And yeah, like Jeff was just saying, sleep is a really important thing that we all do of all ages. And we all wonder about it. But I like to start out with, did you always want to be a neuroscientist? We are always curious about the way people think and do things.
That's a great question. And I have to say, I came to be a neuroscientist a little bit through a circuitous route, if I
can
say. Okay.
So I think where my origins in science were actually cooking.
Oh.
I like to experiment. I like to figure out stuff in the kitchen. And the other piece of it was I was a naturalist. I loved being outside.
Oh.
So I think those two things, just sort of the curiosity part of understanding nature and being out in the real world and seeing how things worked and wondering how sometimes they work.
Yes.
And also this sort of inkling to experiment and figure out new ways of cooking and doing things, I think that sort of launched me in that direction.
Oh,
but in fact, I ended up first, I was a water quality researcher for the National Park Service. And so which also was great and fun. And I had a fantastic experience with that. So like I said, it's a little bit of a lot of detours along the way. But
that's okay.
That's the very definition of circuitous.
Yes.
Food to water to sleeping.
There you go.
So could you finish that sort of path for us on how you ended up as a sleep neuropsychologist?
Yeah, happy to. So again, I was kind of went one route and ended up being a teacher. And I was a science teacher.
Okay.
At a high school. And because I was a science department head, I was allowed to, we were a building school, we were developing curriculum. And so I thought, oh, wow, you know, I'm really interested in the brain and I'd like to know more. So I designed a course in neuropsychology and it became really super popular with the students and it kind of, we sort of fueled each other. And I was at one point thought, well, this is great, but I really need to further my own education.
So
I applied to a doctoral program in neuroscience and kind of landed at this area of sleep. And part of, I think, why is I kind of look at sleep like a superpower.
Okay.
And we all wish we could sleep. We want to be able to sleep more. We want to have good quality sleep.
Yes.
But for some of us, that's not so easy. And so watching my students, who often were somewhat sleep deprived, and seeing what some of the effects of that were, really made me curious about how sleep and sleep problems could affect our ability to learn and our emotions. And so, yeah, again, a little bit of a roundabout route, but that's how I landed there.
I mean, that's so cool. And I'm with you on that. Like, because I mean, clearly we've all gone through bouts where you can't sleep and it's for a little while, or, you know, you don't sleep well. And then the next day you're just dragging, right? And then now that we're adults, we can guzzle down caffeine. But I'm thinking, now here's my question. Does drinking all that caffeine the day when you didn't sleep make it worse for that next night for you to sleep?
Yeah, very good. Very intuitive. Yeah, it's absolutely true. So caffeine, I'll talk a little bit about sleep mechanisms if you want.
And yeah. Then
yes, please. Really,
that would be great.
What caffeine does for us and what it does kind of not for
against us.
Against us.
So we are all busy people. And I know I'm talking to students and I know that they're busy all day doing all the things they do in the classroom, learning and trying to concentrate and, you know, doing the things they do with their friends and socializing and all the social media stuff. And then, then going to, you know, whatever sports practices. So we're all super busy. It's almost the first thing that comes out of someone's mouth when they say, you know, how are you?
Oh, I'm busy. So busy.
Well, isn't it crazy? But, and I am too. I'm guilty of being overly busy. But the thing that's happening in our brain when we're so busy is that we're using energy. And our brain, more than any other organ, really demands energy. So it's using a high amount of our body's energy all the time. When it does that, what happens is we start to build up a waste product in our brain of that use of energy, and that's called adenosine. So as we're thinking and just using up all this energy and we end up with this waste product, adenosine, it's why at the end of a day, when we just think, I can't think anymore, my brain is tired, I want to take a nap, right?
That's a real thing is what you're telling me. I can say that. That's
absolutely
a real thing.
It is. It's called sleep pressure. And it comes along with some other body changes that are going on at the same time. But that sleep pressure starts to build, and it's building because adenosine is building in the brain. So we're getting this large amount of that.
Huh.
So what it does, though, is really interesting because adenosine goes to particular areas in the brain, and it lands on some receptors. So a receptor is something that can pick up a particular signal, a chemical signal.
Okay.
And by doing that, it blocks these, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's what caffeine is doing. But it lands on these receptors and it starts to trigger some of the changes that we feel when we're getting very sleepy. And ultimately promote areas in the brain that start to get us towards sleep is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So like feeling tired or something like that?
Yeah, but mentally tired. You know, I mean, the physical tired can be there too, but it's really, you know, I just can't think anymore. I need to close my eyes or I need to do something that doesn't require a lot of brain power.
Okay. So does the body then know, if you do actually listen to those signals and you lay down or just sit down and relax, your body then knows that it's doing that, what then happens to that adenosine?
Very good. So, well, a couple of things happen that sort of lead toward that. And one of them has to do with light. So our body has a clock and it's in our brain.
Yes.
It's called the SCN or the suprachiasmatic nucleus for all the nerds out there. And it detects light, not like our eyes, but it detects different changes in intensity of light. So another effect of just getting toward the end of the day and the light starts to become more dim and it comes in at much greater angle is this nucleus in our brain tells another little part of our brain called the pineal gland,
right,
let's start to create or to release some melatonin.
Okay.
So that's another part of this whole sleep equation. So it's a very complex set of processes, but those are a couple of things that happen. So we get some melatonin that's released. We have a high amount of adenosine in our brain.
Right.
We start to have a body temperature that is declining. We're getting lower body temperature.
It's just okay.
It starts to happen. And that, together with a few other things, start to create that feeling of sleepiness. And
oh.
So when we lie down and fall asleep, then our brain has the time. This is one function, but the brain has the time to start to clear that adenosine out of the brain. So it takes out the trash.
Okay. Oh, I like that.
That's a great analogy.
So I have a question about the sleep and the light. So Jeff and I talk to a lot of people that go to space, and we've had astronauts on, and I was just kind of doing some research for a book. And I noticed one of the things I came across is that astronauts have a hard time sleeping because they're on the International Space Station, because it's all kind of fake filtered light, right? So that's one of the things that they did, is they started kind of dimming the lights throughout the day or changing the intensity so that the body would understand this is kind of what your 24-hour period is. Is that something that people would have done because of neuroscience?
Oh, yeah, very much so. As a matter of fact, if we could start to do that to ourselves, if we could start, you know, reducing the amount of light that we're seeing toward the end of the day, it's going to help to put us into a better rhythm of our sleep. And that's really, really desirable. We want to not just get sleep, but we want to have good sleep quality and quantity. And to do that, I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I can like stay up really late this night, and then tomorrow now I've got too much homework, so I got to work really, you know, later than I want, and then I have to work early. And then they think they can catch up on sleep on the weekend.
Yes, you hear that a lot.
But in effect, it's not really a total catch up. As a matter of fact, sometimes it throws off your sleep rhythm entirely, because now you've got the sleep debt because you haven't been sleeping, and now you're trying to make up for it. But
right.
You'd be much better off. It's a little bit like jet lag.
Yeah.
Better off if you could kind of make it more equal throughout the week, try to keep the same, you know, when do I go to bed? Oh, about 10 o'clock. When do I get up? Well, sometimes we don't have a choice, right?
So, sure. So
that's true.
But as much as you can, that will help kind of regulate your sleep pattern, and that'll make you feel so much better. But that's
definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had mentioned it once, and we're talking about light and how it sort of interacts with our sleep. You had mentioned that word, caffeine, mm-hmm. and how it sort of interacts. I would love to know how that interacts, and then if there's anything else that also sort of ruins more than just light and caffeine, and then maybe take us back through going the long way around, how does caffeine affect our sleep?
Mm-hmm.
And then my follow-on to that is, what is our best way to level it out and do what we should be doing? but that's probably for the end of the show.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of questions that we sort of beg within this, and that is really what's happening in the brain during sleep. So the adenosine piece is just saying that's really an effect of our brain being active all day.
Okay.
Okay.
And so taking out the trash, getting rid of the adenosine or recycling it, which is what the brain can do, is only one piece of all of that. So we'll see if we have any time. I could go on for hours, but, but I'll tell you, but let's go to the caffeine idea, because we are so caffeinated.
We are as a world, everybody's caffeinated.
No question. I mean, when I see young kids coming in, and maybe some of our audience even, who will go and have a caffeinated drink, and I think, wow, you know, we're drinking it earlier and earlier. So what does it do? Well, what caffeine does when we wake up and we have a cup of coffee is usually our brain hasn't had quite enough time to clear all the adenosine out.
Oh,
and so what caffeine can do is it goes to those places in our brain that are the detectors or receptors for adenosine. And caffeine goes in and it sits on those receptors and it blocks them. So in the morning when that happens, the effect of that will make you be a little bit more alert, that you don't feel quite as tired or sleepy. It helps to kind of stimulate you, and you so you're more wide awake. And so that's fine, except caffeine doesn't clear out of your system very quickly. So if you drink a cup of coffee early in the morning, then it takes about 5 or 6 hours for half of that caffeine to leave your system.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And then it takes another 5 or 6 hours for the next half to leave your system.
But that's what? Just one cup. So if you add more, then you keep fueling yourself, I'm guessing. Yes.
Right. Exactly. So if you keep drinking, or if you're one of these people that drinks coffee in the afternoon as a pick-me-up, then that means that you have a lot of caffeine running around in your brain when you're supposed to sleep. Now, you can still go to sleep. So a lot of people will claim, hey, I can drink coffee right before I go to bed and I can go to sleep. And that's probably possible, but it doesn't mean that the quality of their sleep is what they think it is.
Right.
It's the long effect of getting all that caffeine out of your system. It takes a long time to get it down to a level where it's not really impairing your ability to sleep. And so then if you keep doing that, and this is what happens, is that people then maybe the next day their sleep isn't so great. They say,
more caffeine.
I need more, right? And so you drink more. But when you take that caffeine, then you might be awake for a little bit longer, or maybe even at night you're taking the caffeine. And so you're saying, oh, I can't go to sleep. I've got to do all this work. So my brain is going to continue to build adenosine. So the caffeine will block receptors. But then as soon as that caffeine starts to clear those receptors, then you feel even more tired. You get the caffeine crash that occurs.
Yes. Okay.
Because you really have, you've been artificially telling your brain that you're not tired, but your brain is still active. So it's still making more and more adenosine.
Wow.
So caffeine is only blocking that adenosine, but the normal brain pattern actually, as you said, takes out the trash or recycles it. Mm-hmm. So when the caffeine then wears off, that adenosine plus adenosine from the brain that was working during the time that you were using the caffeine, all of that then crashes onto the brain?
Exactly.
That's the caffeine crash?
That's exactly right.
Wow. I never had it explained that way before.
No. Okay, so I have a different question. Now we talked about caffeine, and now I'm as I evaluate my own caffeine intake, except I do tea. I'm the afternoon tea drinker around 3 to catch that extra crack, you know. But so I've always wondered, and you've probably had kids ask you this before, when you go to sleep, what does your brain do? Clearly you keep breathing and all those kind of things, but like, does your brain still think and dream and all that kind of stuff? Or does it actually rest?
No, fantastic question. First, how do we even know, right? So we
exactly.
You were awake. We think of it as, okay, now I'm not conscious anymore, right? So historically, people thought that the reason we slept was just to restore energy levels. And so that was, you know, we had to close our eyes and let that happen. But what we found, though, is that sleep has so many more really important functions than we ever really ever understood. So when we start to go to sleep, the way we measure when somebody's at sleep is we look at their brain wave activity.
Okay.
And we can use, when I would do studies on people and monitor their sleep, we would put what are called EEG leads on them, which stands for electroencephalogram. So it's make a recording of the brain activity through these electrodes. So we could see what the brain was doing throughout sleep. The other part, though, of evaluating if someone is sleeping is to put two other monitors on them. One of them is called an EMG, it looks at the muscle activity.
Okay.
And the third one is an EOG, which looks at the eye movements.
Yes.
Okay.
So those three things combined, looking at the brainwave activity, looking at the eye movements, and looking at the muscle activity, those three together recordings are called polysomnography.
Hmm.
And somnogram means to do with sleep. So it's a recording of the sleep. And why do we need all of those is because they help us to evaluate not just that you're sleeping, but what stage of sleep are you in?
Right.
Okay.
So your brain is active. When we look at brainwaves during wake, what we see is a very kind of rapid, almost like very fast waves, very, very fast waves. They're kind of short and quick and not very rhythmic. They're just kind of chaotic, but it's because it's the recordings are just recording all sorts of stuff going on in those little brains of ours.
Okay.
And so that's happening during wake. But when we start to drop off into sleep, so if I put all that equipment on you and I said, all right, we're going to see what happens, and you start to get drowsy, what we see is that those waves change form. They start to slow down.
Oh.
Okay.
And they start to look a little less chaotic. And they eventually, they go, when you drop down into what we call deep sleep, they become very rhythmic and they look like they're all choreography. All the brain areas have this choreography going on, where instead of crazy and chaotic, you see this beautiful pattern of activity where the waves are slow and they're deep and they're it has to do with deep sleep, but we call it slow wave sleep.
Oh.
So we do slow wave sleep. So this is within probably the first half an hour that you're lying down and you're going into this deeper and deeper sleep. And then after about maybe getting close to like 40, 50 minutes, your brain suddenly looks like, bam, it's awake. It goes up into a really short period of activity that looks much like when we're awake. And that's your first period of rapid eye movement sleep. And what's incredible about this is that pattern of going into non-REM sleep, which is the first
stage,
and then into rapid eye movement sleep, it happens again and again every 90 minutes.
Right.
So is that when you dream when you're in REM, is what I had heard? Yes.
Yes. So rapid eye, at least it's best associated with dreaming. And in the beginning of the night, our rapid eye movement sleep or our dream sleep is very short. So within that 90-minute period, we might have just a little blip of just a couple minutes of that activity of rapid eye sleep. But what's freaky about it, when we go into rapid eye movement sleep, we're paralyzed. And that's where the muscle measurements.
Really?
We can't move. Our muscles, every muscle in our body that are voluntary muscles. So we can still breathe. We can still do all
that. Right.
We don't have to control. But the things that we normally could control, our arms and our legs, can no longer move.
I did not know that.
Nor did I. That's fascinating.
Yeah, a little freaky.
And like
I'm with you. A little freaky.
Yeah. So there's a lot of theories about why. You know, it may be that REM sleep is when we have all these crazy thoughts and dreams, and maybe it's a kind of a protection so we don't act them out. So
or like sleepwalk or something. Yeah.
Right. And that is also, so rapid eye movement sleep is just that too. We can record our eye movements, not like we normally do when we're awake and we're looking around, but these crazy horizontal back and forth movements of our eyes, which is why that's called rapid eye movement sleep. So it's also called paradoxical sleep because it's kind of weird in that our brainwave activity looks like we're awake, but the rest of it, our body can't move. So we're sort of, our dreams are going on while our brain is very, very active in certain parts of our brain, but our body is totally paralyzed.
That is so weird.
Yeah.
It really is. And is there any understanding in your world of why that is the brain using so much energy that the muscles don't have any to use?
It sounds like a good theory. I'm not sure anyone knows 100% why. It has to do with some of the choreography in the area of the brain called the brainstem. Mm-hmm. So certain things are getting, it's kind of like there's little switches. Some things get turned off, some things get turned on during these various times of sleep. And it might be true. I mean, there's some reason you might think, well, it's probably a good idea that I can't go run around and act out my dreams.
Yes.
Protective feature of that. Because REM sleep is when we think that we really are, we are processing not just memory, but we're processing emotions, our emotional memory.
Oh. Okay. So next question. I could ask you like a billion of questions because I think sleep is fascinating too. It's very intriguing to, you know, because we know a lot, but not everything about it. So do you have tips for people like me who occasionally wake up in the middle of the night and your brain is so like, oh my gosh, like you're already thinking about it, going through lists in your head about what you have to do the next day. How do you get back to sleep?
Well, first of all, welcome to my world.
Right? I think we're probably all there.
Quite literally. That was excellent.
Yes.
And it's funny because, you know, it's almost worse being a sleep researcher because I know the, like, what happens when we're not getting adequate. So I start thinking about that too. I'm thinking, oh, shoot, I really need to go back to sleep. I think the best way, honestly, is to really work at trying to get that rhythm down. So trying to be very regular with your sleep, what's called sleep hygiene, but, you know, going to bed at the same time, have a bedtime routine, you know, take a nice warm bath or, you know, sit and do some reading in lower light. And that's kind of a good way to initiate sleep. So that's one way to just fall asleep, which
right.
Some of us, the falling asleep isn't the problem. It's the getting up. And then the brain just seems like it's ready.
It's like, to go. Ping! Yeah. And I look down and I'm like, oh gosh, it's 3:30. Lovely. Oh,
yeah. I do the same. One of the things though that may be helpful, and you can try this, is there's something known as the physiological sigh. And what that is, and you do it all the time and you don't even realize it, but basically it's when you take a really deep breath and then you let it out. So it's literally a sigh. And so you're getting a big hit of oxygen, but you're getting even a larger release of carbon dioxide.
Oh,
and if you do that rhythmically for, you know, just like keep doing that, it's like many people do in meditation.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That it activates a part of your nervous system that is the rest and digest part of your nervous system. That will kind of will slow you down. It'll also get your mind off of, hopefully, whatever you're starting
the list that I'm making in my head.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Love that suggestion. I think I'm going to be trying that tonight.
Yeah.
Is there anything different? Because our listeners are all the way from kids, but we have whole families listening. And that sounded very much to us adults. Is there anything that kids should be doing differently?
Yeah. I think one of the things that is really a challenge for all of us, but especially younger people who are online all the time. So looking at their phones, looking at social media, or just doing homework and things online, or watching a movie online, is to try to be disciplined somewhat and say, there's a point in time where it's more important that I'm not doing those things, that I'm not, and I don't allow a lot of light in my room.
Okay.
So not having a phone in your room or, you know, having all those little lights that seem to be everywhere these days because you have all the chargers going, you
yes.
know, trying to reduce that is going to help. It will help a great deal. Another thing is drinking a nice warm cup of green tea or something that is not caffeinated.
Not caffeinated.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, that's good. So, you know, the thing, it's funny that you mentioned dark rooms because my husband and I were in the Navy at the Naval Academy, and that's, he calls it, when I go to sleep, it's dark and ship. Like everything, even the little like light that's our house alarm. Yeah. That has a little washcloth over it. Like there's no light in our room. And that's, he says, great. It's funny because when I am traveling and he's in the room by himself, he can sleep with the lights on. It doesn't bother him. But I am dark and ship person.
And that's good too. And never turning on the lights at night. Like if you get up, like we all have to get up. Sometimes you go use the restroom, whatever.
Yeah.
Avoiding any light at all is really important because, especially early in the night, because once you flip on a light, the melatonin level just it goes down the tubes. It basically shuts that off entirely, and that's going to help to at least certain levels of that regulate sleep.
Well, that's good. Well, we could talk about sleep forever, and like, so we might actually have to have you back because I have more questions about neuroscience and whatever. But we are at that point in the show where we ask if you have a challenge for our listeners for sleep or something else involving neuroscience. What do you think, Dr. C?
I do. I think that most of us aren't really aware of our sleep habits. And so one challenge I have is I have something, and can I link something on your website?
Absolutely. Yes.
So I have a nice, kind of like, it's a little sleep diary, and it doesn't take a lot of time, but it'll give you a place to record the time you go to bed and the time you fall asleep, which would be, you know, that's hard to always gauge. But
right.
And some other factors that might occur during the night, including, you know, dreams and things like that, anything you remember, and what time you get up. And just to keep that record, to just track and see what patterns are existing in a given week. But then the second part of the challenge is this, and that is one of the things that helps you to regulate sleep, obviously, is making certain choices to do something. And
yes,
one of the things that would be super helpful is if you can, in the morning, and you can try this as an experiment, when you get up, be sure that you go outside. I mean, after you, you know, obviously
get dressed.
to get natural light first thing in the morning, not artificial light. It's not the same, but getting natural light, because it'll help to set that circadian clock, and getting that in the morning will help your body to say, oh, it gives you that sort of, it frames your day. So it tells you this is day. And then at nighttime, when dimming the lights will also give you that sort of framing that'll help you to get into a better rhythm.
Oh, okay. I like that.
I like that a lot.
I'm going to try that. Yeah, I think that's really cool. Well, I have learned tons. So this has been really interesting for me, learning about neuroscience. And I'm sure we'll have you back on again to talk about a different part of the brain, because the brain is such a fascinating part of our body. But thank you so much for being on Solve for Kids, Dr. C.
Thank you, Dr. C.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
We said in the intro this was going to be a fascinating conversation, and talk about fascinating. We might have to have Dr. C on again. I think we still have more questions. This was fascinating, Jen.
Oh my gosh. I have lots more questions. I mean, we didn't even get into dreams and all those things.
Oh boy.
I mean, wow. But I learned so much.
Yes.
And I was thinking, I honestly have been trying the get outside in the morning to get natural light to set your circadian rhythm. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
And in addition to her other challenge too, right?
Absolutely. Both of these challenges are so practical. It's not just, hey, let's learn something sciencey. This is going to help us understand ourselves better on when we have those good days, when we have those seemingly sluggish days. Maybe we can start to figure out some things on, you know, we've all heard that everybody needs 8 hours. No, I can do with 4 hours. And I think everybody's different, like Dr. C says, and we got to figure that out for ourselves.
Yes. So get out there and make your sleep diaries and see what you can learn about yourselves. And we always love to hear comments from our listeners.
Yes.
So be sure to tag us on our social media. We are at Kids Solve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to check out our website, solveitforkids.com, where we have a paged for every episode, and we have book recommendations there for kids if they want to learn more about it.
Everybody. I decided not to do any afternoon caffeine based on what we just learned. But until our next episode, Jen and Jeff promise to stay awake. You'll hear us next time on
Solve It for Kids.